Hello everyone and welcome to this new session of Memcast. We're delighted to be joined today once again by Dr. Tom Skinner that's going to go through another hematology topic with us, another complicated and complex topic which we hope we're going to simplify it, take the stress off of internal medical trainees that might encounter this in their exam questions or in their day-to-day work. We're going to talk about thrombotic thrombocytopenic purpura today, or TTP.
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hello. Good to be here again.
So, as always, we're going to start off with a clinical case.
Yep.
Okay. So, the case we're going to discuss is a 27-year-old lady that's 26 weeks pregnant. She presents to ED with a 10-day history of just generalized weakness. It's her first pregnancy with no previous complications. Over the course of the past week, she's become quite weak, lethargic, and she developed mild jaundice. Her husband noticed she was quite drowsy and unable to get up this morning, so he took her to AED. The emergency department team examined her, and they noted she's drowsy but responsive, and she doesn't have any focal neurology. On examination, she's hemodynamically stable with a blood pressure of 120 over 80, but she looks pale and jaundiced. We have some blood tests that come back. A full blood count that shows
hemoglobin of 103 and platelets of only 90.
A blood film was sent urgently and comes back with fragments or schistocytes. Also, the rest of the blood showed a raised reticulocyte count, raised LDH, a slight AKI from previous blood tests, abnormal liver function test with
raised
bilirubin, and her clotting is sent that comes back as normal, INR of 0.9 and normal APT, and also fibrinogen is sent that comes back normal as well. Whilst waiting for a medical bed, she starts having seizures. So she's quickly shifted to a high dependency unit for management and monitoring. So Tom, what are your thought process when you hear about this type of case? How would you investigate it?
So it's always kind of a scary potential diagnosis of TTP when you see kind of the fragments on the blood film. They've got anemia and a thrombocytopenia. Immediately, you kind of concern, could this be TTP? Is it DIC or possibly HUS? Are the other kind of two big differentials? The normal clotting with a normal fibrinogen makes DIC kind of less likely. And to the kind of main other diagnosis is the hemolytic uremic syndrome. In that, you'd expect a lot worsening of the renal function and a more severe thrombocytopenia. The classic kind of features of TTP clinically, and particularly from this case that you make you more concerned that it is TTP, are the kind of fluctuating neurological signs, which can start as kind of generalized confusion or weakness and then can escalate to full-blown seizures. Also, you get fevers frequently and renal impairment, although not as severe as in HUS, and then the thrombocytopenia and MAHA, which is microangiopathic hemolytic anemia, which we'll come on to with the investigations. So in the first instance, kind of the full blood count, you see an anemia with thrombocytopenia, and so you should always request the blood film to look for the fragments or schistocytes. And if they're present, then you start to get worried. Also, check for a full hemolysis screen. So you expect a raised reticulocyte count, raised LDH and bilirubin, low haptoglobin, although that normally takes longer to come back. So it just kind of confirms the diagnosis, but later on, and you do a DAT, so direct antiglobulins or Coombs test, and that's normal because it's not an autoimmune hemolytic anemia. And then you check the clotting screen and fibrinogen, and that should be normal, which helps to rule out DIC. And then we check a troponin, which is raised in about 50% of cases, and a raised troponin is like a poor prognostic sign. And once you suspect TTP, the key test to do is looking for an Adams 13 enzyme, which is a enzyme that normally cleaves the large, ultra-large kind of molecular weight multimers of von Willebrand factor. And the job of the Adams 13 is to chop these big molecules into the normal kind of von Willebrand factor. So when the job of von Willebrand factor is to bind platelets and collagen, when collagen's exposed by trauma to the blood vessels to form a clot. But the Adams 13 helps to regulate the von Willebrand factor so they're not too big. But with a deficiency of Adams 13, you very large multimers don't get broken down. And so they've got lots of binding sites for platelets and to the collagen. And so they get form clots in the arterioles, the platelets stick to them, causing a consumption of the platelets, and the red cells get broken down in the kind of the mesh that it's formed, which is what gives you the hemolytic anemia, the low platelets, but also blood clots. And then depending on where the blood clots form, gives you the symptoms of kind of neurological symptoms or renal impairment. So we send off plasma to look for this Adams 13, and if it's low, kind of less than 10%, then that kind of confirms the diagnosis of TTP.
Okay, great. So you went through the differential diagnosis and physiopathology, also the investigations. With regards to investigations, obviously, are there any other investigations like scans that you would think about doing, depending on the system involvement, like MRI scans or CT heads?
So the short answer is no, and that what you don't want to do is delay getting the Adams 13 test done and delaying the treatment by trying to get a CT head, for instance. So you can do a kind of a CT head, but it shouldn't delay the treatment in that it's not going to change the management.
Okay, and because you mentioned management, so how would we manage TTP, and where would these patients actually be better managed, and what's the right setting to observe and monitor a patient and treat a patient with TTP?
Yeah, so they have to be managed in a kind of a tertiary center. So in each region, there'll be a designated tertiary center where patients go to receive plasma exchange. So work in the southwest. So everyone, Cornwall, Devon, Somerset, go to Bristol to get the plasma exchange. And that their aim is to start the plasma exchange within 4 hours of the diagnosis. And so sometimes as soon as you suspect it, if there's a high probability that it is TTP, then you try and start arranging for patients to move to the tertiary center so they can start plasma exchange as soon as possible, or arrange for kind of the initial plasma exchange to be done by the renal team or ITU, depending on how things are set up at a local hospital. And the plasma exchange, the aim is to take out the blood with antibody and the ultra-large molecular weight von Willebrand multimers and replace it with normal fresh frozen plasma, which will replace the Adams 13 that the patient is lacking. And there are, just to mention, there are kind of two types of TTP. It's kind of congenital TTP, where people inherit a deficiency of Adams 13. And then in 95% of the cases, it's acquired TTP, where they've developed autoantibodies against Adams 13, which inhibits it from working. And so the plasma exchange helps to remove that antibody and the affected Adams 13 and replace it with normal, Adam's 13. And then at the same time, you start steroids, which could either be IV methylprednisolone or oral prednisolone to help then suppress the immune system. And then later, you start rituximab, which is an anti-CD20 antibody that binds to the B cells to stop the production of antibody.
Yeah, and sorry, I was going ahead of myself with the treatment. You did mention the two types of TTP and acquired one. Are there any risk factors for acquired TTP?
Yeah, so it can be associated with pregnancy, as in the case, can get it post-infection. It can be associated with medications such as cyclosporine, penicillin, and can be associated with malignancy, so secondary to a kind of a solid cancer, and then also SLE and HIV, but it can also be idiopathic.
So yeah, we went through sort of the pathophysiology, the clinical features, and went through the etiology of TTP, and also through management. So you said first line is plasma exchange, it needs to be given as soon as possible. And also steroids and rituximab. And with regards to supportive management, these patients, apart from the complications from plasma exchange that can occur, what sort of outcome do they have and how do they typically do?
So nowadays, if it's treated promptly, people didn't have a good outcome. Untreated, it has a very high mortality of kind of over 95%. But a lot will kind of go on to relapse, even if they get into a remission, and so have regular blood monitoring of their Adams 13 level, full blood count. And so if the Adams 13 starts to fall, then we can start rituximab, kind of retreat with rituximab before it becomes a full-blown TTP.
Great. So what would be your top tips with regards to people that come in? Because obviously patients with TTP are usually quite unwell. What are your top tips for the junior members of staff? So the internal medical trainees or maybe CHOs in A&E that would tend to see these patients. What are the most important steps that they would have to do with regards to what bloods do they have to send and their contribution?
So I think thinking about it, it's in the first instance, it's a rare disorder, so you might only see it once or twice kind of in your whole career, but kind of considering it in someone with a full blood count that's shown kind of anemia and thrombocytopenia with no good cause, and then particularly making sure that a blood film has been made in anyone who's got a thrombocytopenia to look for the schistocytes. And then that should be kind of liaising then with the hematology team. And in addition to the full blood count, it's kind of checking the hemolysis screen. So kind of looking at the bilirubin, requesting a reticulocyte count, an LDH, and checking the DAT to look for kind of the hemolysis picture as well, and then checking the clotting screen, as there is a lot of overlap with kind of DIC. And it really helps from a hematology point of view when you're kind of seeing the blood films to actually speak to the clinicians who have seen the patient to know if they've got any kind of neurological signs or any renal impairment or a fever to help guide the likelihood of TTP and the urgency of checking the Adams 13 level.
It can be expedited if need be, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And often the Adams 13 has to be checked at the tertiary centre, so not every local lab will be set up to run the Adams 13 ELISA. And so that has to kind of be rushed up urgently if there is a suspicion of TTP.
Great. Thank you so much, Tom. That was, as always, a fantastic podcast with complicated things made easier to understand for all of us. And thank you so much for joining us again.
No problem. Anytime.
Thank you to our listeners for joining us as well. And join us next week for a new episode.